At this time, I'd like to introduce our guest speaker for the month of June. And unfortunately, this is Greg's last week with us. So, but we do have the next best thing, and next month, Greg's wife Peggy will be our speaker. So anyway, you're stuck with Greg for the rest of the evening, and Greg will be sharing his experience with steps 10, 11, and 12 tonight.
I noticed Michael put his foot in his mouth when he said the next best thing. He got the woman's lib going over here. I seen you, Bob. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Greg. I'm happy to be here as the saga continues, you know, like the Star Wars trilogy, but this is chapter 4, yet to be seen anywhere. You know, I don't know if you remember, but when I was asked to do this, I complained. I hemmed and hawed. I said, it's June. It's going to be hot. I avoided these people like the plague, you know, because I know they come. Some of them come to my meeting I attend, and I don't want to do this, blah, blah, bing, you know. It's always that way with me. My first thought is, you know, since a little kid, my first response is, nah, I can't do that. Nah, I'm busy. I ain't never doing anything, but I'm always busy, you know. You know how it is. Ain't going nowhere, but I'm always in a rush, you know. Story of my life, you know. When they talk about restless, irritable, and discontent, I think I was born that way. I had some of those things right inside of me, you know. So now, here we are, the final chapter. That must be continued for a lifetime, you know, the never-ending story, you know. I'd like to say congratulations to Greg, and I heard you say, you know, at some of these we balked, you know. Balking is all right if you get right back to it, because it's just a motion you started and then you stopped. But if you prolong the getting to starting again, that's where we have the trouble. Congratulations, Peter. Welcome from Miami. I know it's probably hotter up here now than it is down there, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. This is special. You know, we talked about working the ninth step, and that's where I concluded last week. And as we move on, everybody comes to this. I mean, everybody who's in AA knows the promises. The promises. And I got to remember, too, as being a little kid, when somebody promised you something, there was usually something that went with it. You know, they said, if you be good, I promise you'll get this. And come time to getting it, but you weren't really good. Yeah, but I was trying to be good, you know. We can't, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't, all we can do is try. It even says in our 12th step, we try to carry this message to others. I have to pick up the program of action. See, this for the first time in my life, I was realizing I got to do the work. My sponsor can lead me any which way he wants. He can lead me this way, and I know Mike does, and I know my sponsor did. This is the way we get better. And then the results happen, which are the promises. We're looking for a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. These are the things that are promised to us if we do what we're supposed to do. What we should have been doing all our lives, which was like alcohol stunted our growth, or you could say it or whatever. And I just want to say, when I first started this whole thing, I went way back, if you remember. I mean, I started when I was 5 years old and talking about things. And I had an opportunity this year, and it did me a world of good. I got to go back to high schools and speak in high schools. Did me a world of good, because I really got to see just where I was insufficient, where I was inadequate, where I was afraid, you know. You go to high school, and I told you, from a Catholic grammar school, I don't know what to expect. I have no experience in doing these things, so I learned as I went along. But then somewhere along the line, I picked up alcohol, and they tell us it regresses our progress. Big time. Look at me now. Look at me now. There's a perfect example over here. He still can't say anonymous. Anonymity, you know. Practice, practice, practice. How do you create a habit? You practice, practice, practice. Henny Youngman, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You practice. I asked that one time of a friend of mine from the city, and he says, well, it depends on what door you want. If you want to go to 57th Street, you know. I said, no, slow down, you know. And it says here, too, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, that means we got to walk through some stuff. This stuff's not easy. If you remember, too, this goes against every grain of my body. Every natural desire. You know? My social instincts were warped. My security instincts were warped. My sexual instincts were way out of whack. And now you're telling me I got to toe the line. I got to start... Ooh. Slow down. You know what I mean? But it does say, too, you'll be amazed before you're halfway through. You know, I'm sure you're amazed. I'm sure your wife is amazed. I'm sure she's seen some difference. You know, and but then in the beginning it says half measures avail us nothing. So I'm amazed before I'm halfway through. Half measures avail us nothing. It gets confusing. It can get confusing. Slow down. You know, the personality changes that take place as a result of the steps we just did. I will know new freedom. I will know new happiness. You know, I will not regret the past. No, I wish you shut the door on it. Now, I mean, I didn't tell you some graphic things I did. It's none of your business. It really isn't. It has nothing to do with anything, about anything. Those are my experiences for learning. You know, those are my experiences for learning. Will I regret it? Nah. Regret means to repeat something. The word R-E, you know. I don't know what regret means. I meant to look it up last night because we had a promise meeting last night, and we were on that promise. Am I in grit now, or do I have a past? You know, you can play all head games with the words and stuff, but I don't regret it. It's what got me here. That was my roadmap to getting where I am now, and to seeing that I finally had a change. You know, and we talked about, we did the 10th and 11th step at another group that I attend to. And it says that one of the last results we're talking about here, you know, our promises, it says, we will suddenly realize that God's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Now, you see a lot of people struggling with step one that won't even admit they're an alcoholic and have struggling. And now here they are at step nine. So there is some growth there. And where did I get the courage? It's only by the grace of God. See, I asked and it came. Help me walk through this. Help me to do these things. Help me to do this. Help me to talk to this guy. Help me to do this fifth step. You know, and I said time and time again, I'm not telling you nothing. I'm not telling you nothing. Nothing. You know, I was suddenly realized what God is doing for me, what I couldn't do for myself. But now we get into the big boy steps. I mean, really, the 10th step, it doesn't get as much credit as it is. I mean, the 4th step, everybody's... And don't be afraid when you hear speakers on the podium, you're like, wait till you get to the 4th step, you know? 4th step is our friend. It helps us grow up. And the 10th step is just a continuation of that. It's a continuation. It's where we're doing the 4th and the 5th step, and I started to see a pattern in my life. So I know people and situations will always affect me. I have to ask myself those important questions. What's being affected with me now? It tells us in the 12 and 12, restraint is our top priority. And you hear people all the time. My tongue gets me in trouble all the time. And if only I control my tongue. But all actions, all words come from thought. So what we're really working on here, and as we have been working all along, is we're trying to change our ideas, our emotions, and our attitudes. We're trying to get them in proper use with the will. Now, God's will. And again, what is God's will for me? And I don't know what He has in store for me for my life. God's will is just, again, to be happy, joyous, and free. To pass on this message so freely. That's what it is. Help one another. That's why He put us all here together. You know, not just in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in the world. Help each other. Give experience. Experience of what you learned. But we all get distorted views. Alcohol and drugs do that. But again, I must remember, alcohol is but a symptom. Bottles are nothing but a symbol. I got to get down to the root details, and that's why we do this process. And it's been outlined in such a simple form. I just was reading Milt Loring's Jacket, The Dumb Guy Approach. Let's keep this simple. You know, I've seen a lot of intellectual people go out the door and not get this because they thought it had to be harder than what it really is. When they say it's a simple program, it is. The dumb guy approaches, just read the black. Just read the black. You know, when it says to pray, we pray. It says to write, we write. Help others, we help others. And this whole book is being directed in these last two steps of being maximum service to others. To be there for others. Get out of self. Doctor's opinion states 3 times. You got to get out of cell. Bill Wilson came up with the formula. Now I'm not going to get into the history. Just to get out. He said, with all ultra-modern equipment that they had in their psychoanalysis and all that other stuff, they could not help the alcoholic stay stopped with all their modern technology. And this is in the 30s. So you can imagine, even today, 2003, with all their modern technology, all their probes and their windows and opening up, they can't keep another alcoholic sober like another alcoholic can. We've been there, we've done it, we know it. Carry this message, not my message. The message that's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that is found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that so many people miss. A lot of people go to step meetings, they read out of 12 and 12. 12 and 12 is great. It was written much after this. There's no directions on how to work the steps in the 12 and 12. There's nothing. It's just essays where Bill wrote later on because he was more adept at working with alcoholics and he knew what made us tick. A lot of good information in that book, but there's no directions. No directions. This is what we need right off the scratch from the get-go. We need directions. We need a formula. Right after step 9. Now, it's another thing, too, the steps. Everybody knows what dominoes, the game dominoes. You line them up, you knock one down. That's the way we should work the steps. We get the force of it. We get the feeling. We don't postpone. I've heard a lot of bad suggestions of people who were not fully informed or whatever reason. They said you shouldn't work a fourth step till you're 2 years sober. Work a step a year. That's killed a lot of drunks. I'm not here condemning anybody. I'm just trying to give you pertinent information, important stuff. We do this in succession. We work the steps to get better. We don't wait to get better to work the steps. And it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take a personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So that means I'm going to make mistakes. Dumb guy approach. Even I can understand this. Because, again, we're struck sober now. I got God in the third step. And I'm going to make mistakes. I'm a human being. You're going to affect me, and I'm going to be affected. There's life goes on. There's a lot of stuff in my head. A lot of stuff in my head. We vigorously commence. Another big word. Anybody knows what it means? Yeah. I know we all do. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. That means we don't wait till we're finished with step 9 to start step 10. We don't wait. We continue. It gives us more directions here. Something we should do. We have entered this. You should throw me off when I was a rookie. We have entered the world of the spirit. That's heavy, isn't it? Especially from a kid with all Catholic school upbringing and background and avoidance of that stuff. Now I'm into the world of the spirit. And if you remember early on, it said we would be rocketed into a new dimension. Well, we're in the new dimension, And it says, early on, if you read this, because he gives it to us in a sequence. Sometimes some of the things he gives us up front could be done here, but I'm not for changing anything. But it's just, he keeps repeating himself over and over and over. Because we need repeating, because I'm not a good listener. So you got to keep telling me a few times, And you see one of your sponsors keep bumping his head on his wall, and all you can say to him, you weren't listening, were you? You weren't listening. And that's basically it. So he keeps repeating himself over and over again. I've entered the world of the spirit. It tells us early on, when we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. So now you got to ask yourself, well, what does that mean? Do I get better physically? And everything else is good? 4, 5, and 6, we straighten out mentally. Maybe even 7. 8, 9, we straighten out physically. Our social background gets better. Our working habits get better. See, we're looking for a new thinking. We're looking for new actions. My actions stunk. My thinking stunk. I've entered the world of the spirit, which means it's the fourth dimension, which means I must practice and continue to grow. I must grow. The best step here for growth is to take a daily inventory. Step back when agitated. Look, what have I done wrong? And if you look at these words here, We're doing the other steps. We're repeating the other steps. We're repeating the other steps. Now, there's from the podium, and let me see, let me get a frame of mind here. People say we don't live in 10 and 11 and 12. People say we got to go back and do more inventory. Well, even our founder says it's wise to take an annual or semi-annual retreat to do what we have to do, to clean up, to keep, you know. The 10th step is the daily thing, the walking around step, where I can look at myself. And he goes on even further. We discuss them. Again, if you read this, it goes over the steps. I'm not really going to read them. But then there's more promises, more personalities that take place, more personality changes. The first one is we get a new code of other people. Love and tolerance is our code. None of us, I never had a code by which I lived by. The rifleman had a code by which he lived by. I remember Luke McCord and all that other stuff, but I don't remember me ever having a code or a set of morals or principles or anything. You know, the first thing I go with, love and tolerance, you know. Love their best, never fear their worst. That's as simple as I can get. Love their best, never fear their worst. What are they going to do to me? You know? Love you anyway. We're talking on the way up here. Some of us just still have rough edges on us. I got rough edges. You know? I got rough edges. Believe me, I mean, I look docile and quiet up here, but I got rough edges. And if you ask me later on, I'll tell you something. I'm not going to say it from the podium. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Now the sanity has returned. The sanity has returned. When it comes to alcohol, we are no longer obsessing. Obviously, we're no longer physically craving. And if the thoughts do come, we recoil from them. Boom. We don't even have to think about it. We just recoil from them because we know. You know, some traits we got as a kid. You put your hand on a hot stove, your mother tells you not to, you do it anyway because you never experienced it before. I never went back and stuck my hand over there again. I know. But we never knew before. Alcohol kept beating us and beating us and beating us. Now our sanity has returned. Now I'm all the way in the 10th step. And people say when they do in the 2nd step, why our sanity has returned? No, we just came to believe. We came to believe that God would do this for us if we did certain things. And here's the certain things we did. I got my sanity back when it comes to alcohol. That's that simple. I'm no longer fighting it. No longer even avoiding it. Me and Peggy just got married last year. We had alcohol at our wedding. A whole bunch of people from the fellowship, they didn't even notice there was alcohol there. You got alcohol at your wedding? We don't avoid it. We don't even know. It doesn't touch us no more. You know, we all added something to the party and we had a great time. There were people there to drink, and they drank sociably. You know, we didn't have to carry anybody out of the room. You know, we didn't have to escort anybody. We didn't have to cut anybody off. They drank like normal people, and that's where our problem stems from. Whenever we see like Bill Wilson would describe the gay laughter in the bar and stuff, and I always used to think there was something wrong with the people. he was watching, and if you ever go to a bar and you experience it, you're watching normal people drink. You're not watching alcoholics drink. You're watching normal people. There's no punitive, there's no damage, so they're able to walk home. We got to remember that. I want to go for some excitement. I want to go for some fun. I want to watch the game. And you're fooling yourself. We react sanely and normally. Most of us do. Because it says some of us have grave emotional mental disorders. If you remember that. And what that means to me is some of us do, some of us don't. So we react sanely, we react normally. We find this happens automatically. You know, we will see that a new attitude towards liquor has been given to us. A new attitude towards liquor has been given to us. We didn't have to swear it off. We didn't have to fight. It was given to us. That's the gift. You hear people say, stick around till the miracle happens. Here's the miracle. Way over in the 10th step. 1, 2, 3, going to meetings, cha-cha-cha, listening to speaker tapes and doing all that stuff. You got to do the work. You really have to do the work. It's been my experience that I had to do this to get this change. I had to do this to get this change. It just comes. You know, and like a good teacher, he always gives us examples. And I've been trying to give you examples these last 4 weeks. I've been trying to give you examples. You know, he tells us it's easy to let up on this program of action. It really is. We're better now. I don't have to go all that way. I don't have to come here on 4 consecutive nights. You know, And I got to remember, God does not make too hard of terms for me. And this isn't hard terms. No. I put up with traffic all my life. I put up with heat. I put up with rain. This ain't not hard terms. Jeez, I owe. No, I owe. You know. And then again, it goes, we got our sanity back. We got the use of our will back. See, God gave us brains to use. We're not giving him, I said this before, we're not giving him my brains. I'm not giving him my will. I'm just, here. You take care of it. Take care of my thinking. Because my thinking really stinks. It really stinks. And my best thinking didn't get me here. This is the last place I wanted to be. You know, my best thinking is, oh, I think I'll go to AA. I think I'll go, nah. Nah, the pain and the circumstances of how I was living, and that's what I wanted to clean up when I first came here. But I've come to find out by doing this work, I changed my character. My attitudes got better. My disposition got better. I became a better person. And all those things took care of itself. You know, the bills, the car, the license. You know, all that stuff took care of itself. All that stuff took care of itself. Eleventh step. I'm going to touch on this a little bit, but I'm going to tell you a little story. And I asked somebody to remind me about parachuting, and nobody reminded me, but I didn't forget because it's vividly on my mind now. I always had this inkling to be a parachutist, to jump out of a plane. Insane as it sounds, I always wanted to do it. And I even remember at a bar, not on a bar stool, but afterwards at a restaurant, a diner, just coming from the bar, a guy happened to come in and sit next to me. And he gave me all the information to go parachuting. He gave me the phone number. He even gave me his number in case I wanted to tag along with him. And I said, sure, you know how you are. Sure, yeah, I love everybody. Yeah, the world's great. Yeah, sure. I never did it. I never did it. This was back in the mid-80s. Never did it. Got into sobriety a couple years. I found somebody who did it. So I'm going to try to relate this. If you listen to me and follow me carefully, the only reason why I'm telling you this is because at the same time I'm working this program, working the fellowship. And to be a parachuter, to jump out of a plane, you got to follow directions. Clear-cut Pacific directions. When you jump, you pull. Same thing in here. If I want to change my life, I got to give. I got to give. You know. So the first time I got some instructions, I didn't have much to worry about because it was the old Army style. It was a static line. The chute pulled itself automatically. So all I had to do was overcome the fear of being able to step out on the plane's ledge and let go. I let go. I blacked out. I'm only 3,000 feet in the air. I blacked out. The only thing that woke me up, thank God, was the chute opening up. And I came to, and all I seen was the landscape, the sky, nothing but silence. And it seemed as if the ground was coming up to me, like I wasn't moving. I followed directions. Had a walkie-talkie on me. The guy told me, pull this, pull that. Followed directions, perfect. The only one thing is I forgot to listen how I landed. Boom! He comes straight down. And now here I am getting angry at myself because I hurt myself. So why couldn't I have done this better? Related to my steps, to my life. Why couldn't I have done this better? And then the little voice came to me. Says, Greg, this is the first time you ever jumped out of an airplane. Give yourself some credit. It's the first time I ever did these steps. Give myself some credit. Yeah? So being who I am, I went back. You know, more is better. You got to remember that more is better. Each time, I tried to listen a little bit more carefully. My main goal on these jumps was just to get the proper form, because I had a goal. I wanted to jump solo, and I still had the static line. So each time I had it, that's all I had to do was practice to get my form. Each time I got a little better with my landing. And you learn from the first time. Pain's a great motivator, isn't it? And you do. I did a little bit better. I got to the next phase where I go up without the static line. I go up even higher. I go up to 10,000 feet now. I have two instructors with me. Just like I got sponsors. I got the fellowship. These guys give me, again, clear-cut directions. We practiced even before we went up. We made maneuvers. We practiced. We looked at films. We watched. What do I have to do? All we had to do was read here. Watch other people's experiences. Watch them grow. We can get it too. Anybody can get this. All I got to do is watch the fellowship. They got it. Why can't I? 10,000 feet, first time I jump out. I make a move. Fine. I can't go to the right. I bolt. Pull the chute. Got down, made a nice, perfect landing. Very proud of myself. Then I got the two instructors. Good cop, bad cop. Good sponsor, bad sponsor. Oh, yeah. You did all right. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Well, this is your money. If you want to waste it, you can do whatever you want. You know, you pulled in, blah, 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 bing, and you pulled too soon. Blah, blah. I got a little resentment. Got a little hurt feelings, you know, a little pride hurt. But I knew what the guy was saying. Listen to us. We'll show you the way. That's what we say here. Listen to us. Show us the way. It went on. And the only reason why I bring this thing up, because I got better. Each time I went up, I could see the clouds. My eyes were, I don't know where my eyes were looking before, but I could start to see the clouds. Now, I can even see the instructors with me. Before, I knew they were there, but I'd never seen them. As I went along, I was able to see their faces. I was able to communicate, do tumble salts up there, get out of control, get back in control. Just like, hey, I get out of control, I get back in control. These things will always materialize for us if we work for them. And it says a key warning. You know, it's easy to let up. You want to let up, you're going to pay the consequences. And it's not always with drinking. It's not always with drinking. So, you know, you have to reverse this whole set of processes. You know, so we do have a little, I shouldn't be saying this, but in my instance, there is some warning signs as we're going down. Sometimes we just stop going to meetings. Sometimes we stop working with others. And if we stop working with others and we stop going to meetings and we stop praying, the cycle is being reversed. You know what I'm saying? And then finally we get irritable, restless, and discontented, and we need that ease and comfort. And then suddenly, the thought comes, we pick up a drink. So I'm working all these things. I'm doing these things. I'm starting to see more things. Just like as I'm working the steps, I'm seeing more clearly now. I'm starting to see my instructors. I'm starting to see what my sponsors tell me. I'm starting to find that inner voice in me. I'm starting to see God. You know, I've probably been mesmerized if I ever seen God. I finally made a solo jump. They made a switch on me. They gave me a smaller parachute, a faster parachute. They gave me a different ripcord. It was now a ball handle where I had to throw it out and a little parachute would come out of the ball. There was a good chance that this thing would wrap around my arm just because of the string and the cord, the way it was set up. The other cord I would pull and hold onto it and stuff. This one was connected to the chute. So now this stuck onto my arm. I would have to take some measures to get it off my arm. Just like we get these defects off our backs. You know? It went swell. As I said, as I was going along this process, now I can see the ground. I can make the turns necessary to get to my destination, which is the ground and the X on the ground. And I could square up. And I could do what I was so easily directed to. Because my life depended upon it. And that's what this fellowship is all about. We're dying by the droves all over the place. So when we say carry this message, this is the message we carry. I've been there. I know what the obsession. I know what that mind is. I know what the unthinkingness is. And now we get to step 11. We saw through prayer and meditation. A lot of people say, I saw through prayer and medication. No. Some people need to be on stuff. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to say, you know, leave those people alone. Don't tell them to get off. Some of us, I've even heard stories where some of us said, you don't need those things, and people went out and died. Leave them alone. Keep working with them. You know, again, many of us have grave emotional mental disorders. We do have the capacity to recover if they have the willingness to be honest. They could be honest. You just take them back. And it says, even Bill Wilson said, he says, better men than us have been using it constantly. You know, 10, 11, and 12 are really personal steps. They're really a personal because we all get to do this a different way. I don't want to give you my concept of what I do up here, because that'd be like the nun telling me how to pray. That'd be like the priest telling me how to pray. You know, all through the book, it tells us what to ask for, how to overcome these things. We get a little chance. We're practicing prayer. We're practicing. Even though I had trouble getting down on my knees, I'm still talking to God. I'm still talking. I'm getting messages, and I'm receiving all these things. Vital suggestions. Again, there are suggestions in the big book. This is a book of directions, but it gives us some suggestions. Go talk to your minister. Go talk to your rabbi, your priest. Read other books. Get your own concept of prayer, of talking with God, of meditation. Get your own. What Ron can do, what Mike can do in meditation, I can't do. What you can do, or what I can do, you couldn't do. It's all different. You know, what I like to do is when I go into meditation, some people say, to stop the mind. You try stopping this mind, I'll give you all the money in the world. I'll pay for you, you know, everything. What I'm trying to do is just slow down the thought process. Instead of like zoom, 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 just get zoom, zoom. You know, quiet myself down. I cannot stop me from thinking. And as you can tell, I get some insane ideas, some insane thoughts. They just come to me, and I used to have a bad habit of speaking them out. And sometimes I still do. Going back, one day parachuting, I'm by myself. I'm solo jumping, I'm doing high jumps, I'm doing low jumps. I did two jumps in one day. I mean, I'm, you know, a true alcoholic that I am. More is better, you know, obsessive. You got to go for it. You got to do it quickly. And I did two jumps in one day. It was getting around dusk. It was getting about this time of night after the second jump. There was somebody during the day that had a film recorded of them in the air, and we were going to sit around. We were going to watch that. I was going to go over what I did for the day with my instructor. We have an instruction book, sort of like a diary, what we did, you know, sort of like our step work, what we did for in that day and stuff. And as I'm walking from my car getting my instruction book, I hear the case. I don't hear it. I mean, you can hear the cans popping. I see the case of beer come out of a bottle of liquor and stuff. The flag goes up. They're drinking. It's okay. You're going to do... I had the purpose. I had no intentions of drinking. I was going to do parachuting stuff. Fellowship. And I look. I'm very thirsty. And there's usually a snack bar there, a little trail, and it was closed. I wanted to get a soda bottle of water. There was nothing for me to get there. The office was locked up. And again, the flag is up. I don't want to drink. They're drinking. It's all right for them to drink. And as I hand my instructor over the table, my card, my book to fill out, my hand goes for his beer. I don't want to drink. I hear the loudest no I've ever heard in my life. Now, I don't know if somebody was having a conversation back there. I don't know where this no came from. But I took a step back. Gratitude prayer came right over me. Now, got my book, started walking to my car, saying a prayer. Thank you, Lord. This is a great day. Not only the two jumps, but I just walked away from the drink that I didn't even want in the first place. Now, is God doing for me what I could not do for myself? Does God not love me? Does he not care about me? Now, and it was early on. I was about 3 years sober, and I remember I'm at a gratitude meeting, and people are talking about how they got their house back and their car back and their families reunited and everything, their job and the financial things are all, everything is great. And I'm still struggling at this time, so I thought. You know, actually, I was doing the best I've ever been at that time. And I'm saying to myself, I'm getting angry. I said, well, what about me? What about me? What about me? Ain't I working hard enough? You know, and I didn't hear a damn thing at that whole meeting. But as we stood up for the Our Father, even before we started praying, a little voice said to me, right, it ain't over yet. More had to be done. So I keep getting answers. So, and I remember I went to retreat and I told the retreat master, says, I have a hard time meditating. I don't think I meditate. He says, wait, he almost smacked me. You know, what are you, stupid? You don't meditate? You know you meditate. You just do it in different forms than what everybody else is telling you. Same thing with prayer early on. I says, I'm having a hard time praying. I don't pray. And the guy says, well, you go to a meeting a day, right? And I says, yeah. He says, well, you'd say two prayers a day. Yeah, what's your problem? He says, you go to two meetings, that's four prayers. What's your problem? Be easy on yourself. You know? You've been praying and meditating without you even knowing it. He gives us, again, it's written down. He gives us things we could do. We can hang out with our wives. We can meditate and talk and pray with our wives. We can do it with friends. I do it at retreats all the time. Me and Peggy have tried it. Me and Peggy still have difficulties doing it because of our work schedule. She has one conception. I have another conception. We're still open to it. We still haven't hit. And I think I know we'll blossom when we do. I mean, another awakening and stuff. And again, he reiterates on what we do as we go through the day. When in doubt, we ask for the right thought or action. Again, it's all. I never had the right thought, never had the right action. My first thought is always usually wrong. It's usually always wrong. Now, like not coming here. That would have been a big mistake. Would have been a big mistake. You know, we constantly remind ourselves, I'm not running the show. This keeps me right size. You know, it keeps me from getting bigger, keeps me from getting littler again. You know, keeps me the right size. I'm not running the show no more. You know, what I wanted to create here in the early fellowship, I'm powerless over alcohol. That's all I had to worry about. I'm powerless over alcohol. When I drink, something happens. Who was talking about that before? You gave a great analogy. When I drink, something happens, both physically and mentally. And I don't usually know what's going to happen when I drink. And other people will usually tell us what we've done. They'll always remind us, whether it's our wives, whether it's policemen, the doctors, somebody will always tell us what we did. And so I'm not running the show no more. I'm not powerless over anything. Now I got to remember, I'm not powerless over your actions. But I can walk away from your behavior. I don't even have to use my lip. I can just walk away. Those are the choices I got today. And you hear from the podium too, and I always hear people say, today I choose not to drink. Oof. Where'd you get that choice from? I still want to know. You know, today I chose not to drink. I still think that's alcoholic insanity. Because I had lost the choice and the power of, I've lost the power of choice to drink or not to drink. And today that's what I gave away. God, take my choices from me. You direct my thinking, you direct my actions. I no longer say, I never said it. I don't choose it. There was many times out there when I was drinking, I didn't choose to drink and I was drinking. Oh, where can I, how can I, I do the right next thing. What the hell is the right next thing? Please tell me that. Please tell me that. No. It tells me here, take some steps back. Count to 10. In the family afterwards, this is a great chapter. Great, great chapter. If you're having trouble with your family afterwards, we got a solution for you. You know, we also have a solution chapter. We have a how it works chapter. We have everything in this book. You know, marriage infidelity. I mean, everything. So if you're working with a sponsee, you can grab the book and show him where it comes from the book. So he'll feel much better seeing it came from the program rather than just your opinion, thinking it's your opinion. Show him where it is in the book. Show him where it is in the book. It's where he'll know. He'll know. The greatest paragraph in this book is on page 88. It works. It really does. I mean, nothing more can be said. Dumb guy approach. Do this, it works. How do you think it will work for me? Do it. Find out. Well, I'm having trouble working my program. Yeah, I know you are. Now, why don't you try ours? It's right here. It's in the book. You know? And we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Step 12, again, it's a personal, it's a learning experience. He gives us clear-cut directions on what we should do. Each case is different. Each case is different. You know, it tells me I was sensitive, I was childlike, I was belligerent, I was all these other things. I was cold as ice, you know, I was a tough guy. And then we get the people who are intimidated, low self-esteem. They can't. They think the worst of themselves. We're all different when we walk in here. All different. The only thing we have in common is that if we take a drink, we'd be looking for a second drink. We're here about recovery. One drunk talking to another drunk with the third thing in mind, bring about recovery. If you got that in mind, we stay sober. You know, you see the bums on the street. Two drunks on the street. They want to get drunk. They always get drunk. In here, two drunks, working sober, trying to stay sober. It just works that way. And it says, practical experience shows that nothing will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Bill Wilson went to Bob, went to find another drunk, not to get them sober, but to stay sober himself. See, that's what a lot of us, sometimes we forget. It's easy to let up on this spiritual program. And if you want to enhance I'm going to read this from the book because I always mess this up, and I don't like to mess this up. Bill Wilson says in his story, "For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead." And you're feeling bad about yourself, things ain't going good, grab another drunk. Listen to that bozo's problems. You know, tell him, yeah, I've been there. You know, just listen to him. You know? And in the back of the book, there's a great story. It tells us we do these things. It's not even a story. It's just a thing. One of the things. I forget what they call them. It says we do these things to avoid the excess concentration upon ourselves. We're giving this away. We're carrying this message to somebody else. So I'm not... You know, the theme song for AA should be, "I'm always on my mind. I'm always on my mind." You know? That's why we... I love that line. Yeah. It says, it even says here, it works when all other activities fail. Whether you're going to meetings, you're praying, you know, you're doing everything else, you're doing step work. Work with another junk. Take it right out of yourself. Take it right out of yourself. Just work with another junk. You know, that's all Bill Wilson had going for him in the beginning. He had no meetings. He had the Oxford Group. He had no meetings. The Oxford Group met once a week or whatever on a Calvary mission and stuff, and then they started expanding. He had nothing else. He was going around the bars and telling them about their white light and everything else, and they were telling him where to stick his white light, and, you know. And finally the doctor told him, "Give him the approach. Give him the approach I gave you. You know, give him the approach. We have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. We're allergic to it. Give him the solution." And the first two steps of this fellowship we got from non-alcoholic people. Dr. Silkworth and Dr. Carl Jung. You know. And even, I mean, come on, today, it gives us a lot of suggestions that were good for the 30s. We know where to find junks today. You know, rehabs just keep sending them to us. Boom, boom, they keep sending, boom. And then you got to deprogram them from the rehab. You know? You got to. I was a student of a fine institution, 13 months, 3 detoxes and a 28-day rehab. I had to be deprogrammed. I didn't know what my problem was. I told you, the only thing I knew was my bumpers didn't work. You know, there was no electro, I was shooting. I needed new bumpetizing. We can do what no other person can. And it even gives us a warning far back in the book. It says, make sure your own house is in order. You know? And this was a family fellowship back then. Bob used to say to the newcomer, he says, "Where's your wife?" He says, "She stayed home." He says, "Okay, next week you bring her. And if you don't bring her, I'll go home and get her." This was all about reuniting families together. You know? Reuniting families. Lost because of our destruction. You know? Some of the amends I made into, and it wasn't really an amends. I really had to do it with my cousins and stuff. We were just separated through the throes of our families and stuff. And I call them every once in a while. And I went over to the house for dinner, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Me and Peggy went to my aunt and uncle's, my mother's brother's 50th wedding anniversary, where we didn't think he was going to make it that long. You know, we got together. And it was simple things I could do. You know, I never really did them any harm. But reunite the families together. You know, and one thing I've learned as I got older, I'm not going to be here much longer. You know, when I was younger, I thought I'd live forever. You know, what we're here to do is, again, take care of each other. You know, and there may be some people, I'm not wishing this on anything, the meeting will go on next week, but a lot of the same people won't be here. Some of the people we may never see again. Something may happen. Some may move, go back home. We may never see you again, Pete. So what our job is to stay in the now. You know, there was one who has all power. May you find him now. And it wasn't a threat in the beginning. You got to find him. Can I go now? Okay. There's a couple of things. I was so intimidated by this thing when I first came here. It was the only thing that was on my mind. I didn't want to say anything. And the second week I was here, I really got really locked up with this thing. And I got locked up with the thought of going ahead and, you know, and then coming back. Magnificent self that I am. There are some things. Working with others. I mean, the whole thing. It's a whole chapter devoted to working with others. Obviously, now we're at step 9, we're at step 10. That's a good time to start sponsoring somebody. A really a good time. You know, because, and I've said it, and I've heard it said, and I've seen it through my own experience with other fellowship, with other members that I've come through with. If you don't start sponsoring in the first year, there's a good probability that you will not sponsor anybody. There's a good possibility. I don't know why that is, but when I read that and I think about it, that's the way it is. I've got a guy I've worked with for 8 years. He never sponsored a person. Never sponsored a person. Guy asked him one time, and a guy fired him within a week. You know? And then I used to think my sponsees were a reflection upon me. And I'd hear from other people all the time, can't you see what they're doing? Can't you stop them? No, I can't. You know, there's another thing, too. I met this guy. I went back to work for the institution that I got out of a couple of years later. I thought I was going to be a have all those alphabets after my name, you know, the C A D A C C C A A Y X Z and all that. I thought I was going to be somebody because I didn't know what else to do. So I said, let me give this a shot. You know, these people tell me I could do anything I want. You know, I went back to classes. I took workshops and stuff, and I fully came to the realization that schoolwork or any kind of written assignments is not for me. You know, you've heard my stories. If you hear, I used to cheat, take the easy way out. You know, and now the government was moving in into the institutions, and they were really adding up on the paperwork. So I said, this is not for me. But I've learned some valuable lessons in there and stuff, and that I could do for myself. And one thing I just want to pass it on real quick, that the body is like a car. You turn the key, engine starts. People in situations, when I get in situations, something happens within me like a key turns. If you notice, the emotions start to flare up. The body got a process that the hands get colder, the feet get colder, the heart starts bumping faster to get the blood through, and in some instances, you can urinate. When they talk about being scared, crapless, the body does that automatically. It's not that there's anything wrong with you. The body does this to eliminate anything in case you have to fight or you have to flight. Fight or flight. You have to fight or run. The body does that automatically. So now in step 10, we're trying to discipline ourselves in a special way. It tells us in the family afterwards, we're having heated arguments at home, neutral corners. Simple as that. Neutral corners, time out, get in your stool, get in your room, whatever. But you only bring up, that's when the harshness comes out. The body does that automatically. It's not, and it's the truest sense that nobody can make you feel a certain way. In a way, it is true because the body kicks in when one of these instincts are hit upon. So now we're dealing with newcomers. They're sensitive. They're childlike. They know everything. The first thing it tells us here, never criticize them. Never criticize them. And I like to ask everybody, what part of never don't you understand? Is it the ne or the ver? No. Never criticize. Never talk down to a newcomer as if you're on a spiritual hilltop. You don't talk down to them. Eye to eye. We're the same size. I just been there before you. You know, I know. Never criticize. Never talk down to them. Never force yourself upon somebody. Bill Wilson says this perfectly with his first couple of people that he tried. And if he kept pecking at them, other people would have lost the opportunity to have what we now have. And probably even Bill wouldn't have stayed sober. Never force yourself upon somebody. And it tells us with directions, we lay this kit of spiritual tools at their feet, at their disposal. Some of us can't read. We help them to read. There's tapes. The big book is in tapes now. There's no excuse. Oh, I don't read. There's no excuse. We can sit with them. We can read. I know people in this fellowship who can now read because of the big book, because of the necessity to get better. You know, motivation, pain, circumstances is a great motivator. It changes lives. The guy reads now. He won't shut up either. And there's another never. And there's another never. Never avoid these responsibilities. You just don't do it. It keeps us sober. We do these things to stay sober ourselves. We make the trips. We do the things, you know. And I just got a thought. You're in trouble. Nah. We talked about the promises, the 8th and 9th step, the personality changes, and the promises of the 10th and 11th. This promise is all through this book. I'm going to give you the 12-step promises. Never avoid these responsibilities. These are our promises. Be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of our recovery. A kindly act once in a while is not enough. You have to act a good Samaritan every day if need be. Now here comes the really nitty gritty. It may mean loss of many nights sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, concealing frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospital, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time, day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash your furniture, burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he was violent. These are the promises we get to look forward to. Huh? Huh? Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor. Sometimes you'll have to take him to a doctor. Sometimes you'll have to minister alcohol to him just to get him to go to the doctor. You know, little promises, you know. And sometimes you may even have to administer sedatives. You know, these have been my experiences. And it tells that these are some things you may not want to miss. Sounds pretty crazy, doesn't it? But I wouldn't miss this for the world. I'm going to tell you, end with a quick story. I came back from retreat, and I meant to say this a little bit before when I started to work for my institution. I met this young fellow in the institution, took a liking to him. The guy knew the 12 steps. He's been in every fine institution in the world. He knew Joe and Charlie. He knew the 12 steps. His sponsor, as he got out of that institution, was Richard B., and we all know who Richard B. is. That was his sponsor. And we all know who sponsors Richard B. And this guy is educated in this book. He could read word for word, quote pages, but yet he couldn't stay sober. Took a liking to him, took him to ball games. We went out to Philadelphia with the clubhouse, had a little gathering together. Guy was an ex-ball player. I figured I'd let him get out of the house, take him to a ball game. Kid didn't know how to act. He had the headphones on. He was secluded. And so I grew, developed a relationship with this guy. He moved out of the house. He moved in with a couple of friends of ours right on the same block I used to live on Broadway in Freehold. One day I go to retreat. The guy played softball with us. He got the fellowship. He got with the fellowship. He was well-liked, good-meaning guy. I come back from retreat, Sunday afternoon, beautiful day, nice retreat. And his throw-up on my steps, talking about puke, right? I didn't have it on my shoes, but it was on my steps. It was just as bad. I had to step over it. Where'd this come from? You know, you get inquisitive. You know, I know I didn't do it. I just got home. I know it wasn't mine from the night before because I knew where I was. So I went to the clubhouse, and there's this guy. He's all dirty. He's drunk. He stinks. He's hungover. And he says, "Greg, I just got thrown out of my place." And he says, I can't see why. And he says, "What do you want?" He says, "Well, I really need a place to stay." He says, "Okay." Walked across the parking lot, went to my trunk, pulled out the Alf quilt, you know, the Alf blanket you gave me. Pulled it out. I said, here's a quilt. You can stay any way you want. And I said to myself, are you being cruel? You know, I went through the emotions afterwards. I said, but this guy's more educated than me. His sponsor, I told you who his sponsor was. He knew this book. I would just be enabling this guy. You know, so again, the directions. We got to know when to give, when not to give. Good story about this. It ended happily. He's gotten back in touch with his parents. Parents, once again, shipped him off to a fine institution. Last time I talked to him, a few years after this, I finally got a hold of him. He was living in Pennsylvania. And he was sober. And he found Jesus. That's what he told me. How'd it go with that? I'm glad he's happy. You know, so we don't always know when to give, when not to give, how to give, when not to give. You know. I'm not going to tell you any more stories about how I talk to people. You know, I try to follow the dictates of this book. I try to get to know everything I can about them. I try to put myself in their shoes. You know, that's the effectiveness and the understanding that we get. You know, like I said last week, he may know more about religion than I do. He may know more about God. He may know more about a lot of other things than I can. You know, so I just let it go. I try not to avoid these responsibilities. I try to carry this message in all my affairs. And my sponsor once said to me, he says, if you can't practice these principles in all your affairs, maybe you ought to try changing your affairs. You know, so I got the message. You know, and there's a story I like to close with, talking about parachuting and everything else. The master was talking to the masses. He would ask them to come down to the edge. And they said, no, we can't. We're afraid. The master said, come down to the edge. He said, no, it's too high, we're going to fall. The master again says, come down to the edge. And they did. And he pushed them off. And they flew, never to know fear again. I wish each and every one of you a happy and safe flight. Now may God bless and keep you company. Till we meet again. Thank you.
First of all, I want to take this opportunity to thank you personally. I knew you'd be good, but you've really touched me over the past 4 weeks. And then on behalf of the Carry This Message group, we have a tradition here. Kathy has a way with making up these cards. You forgot the check? Can I write a check? She does real good with the cards, and this is our gift to you. Little guy under the bridge, from rags to serenity in 12 easy steps. Thank you so much.